This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. How are you doing, Bradley?
Good day. Been a wild day at school. We've been on kind of a full lockdown all day. There was like a cop shooting somewhat near us. I mean, like 20 minutes away, so a lot of the schools near us, you just kind of go on. I mean, we're on lockdown basically every day because our doors stay locked. Mm-hmm. You have to be buzzed in. And basically that means like no outside recess, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that was real fun. Kind of didn't feel like I could leave campus all day. Just got to be around to help with stuff. So my lunch plans got canceled. So, but that is what it is.
Oh, that's tough. I've just got the cold. It doesn't seem quite so bad anymore.
No. Well, yeah. the cop survived. Like it was like a shot in his arm. So he survived. So that's the good thing about it. Before we get started, we want to thank our Patreons for the month. So what Patreon is a way for people that listen to the show to support the show financially. And so up at outofschool.net, we have a way where you can click through that and you know, throw us a couple bucks every month. And one of the things we do is if you support us with a $10 a month pledge, we would like to mention you on the show. And so I want to take time to do that today. So thanks to Envision Design LLC, Michael Slade, and Nicholas Cole Farrell for sponsoring us with $10 a month. So again, that's Envision Design LLC, Michael Slade, and Nicholas Cole Farrell. Even like $1, $2, $3, anything, we certainly appreciate it. It helps us pay the hosting bills and keeps the website up, buys new microphones and things like that. Thanks to everybody that's sent us some money this month on Patreon.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of hosting, I don't know if you have been following much about the recent announcements at Amazon Web Services, product and service dear to my heart.
Yes.
AWS reInvent, it was yesterday and today as we were recording. Today is, what, the 1st of December? So one of the things that I thought was interesting for us, kind of school and technical point of view, is that they've announced a product called AWS LightSail, which is it's like a virtual private server situation. So it's kind of like EC2 we're sort of familiar with. It's Linux servers in the cloud, basically. But with EC2, it's kind of like a building block of a bigger thing where you've got to set up your Elastic IP address and you've got to manage it all and so on. Whereas LightSail is basically all of that wrapped up into a one-click product for a monthly fee rather than a per-minute fee or so on. So if you're going to run your server 24/7 and you want something just sort of straightforward and simple to use, LightSail looks pretty interesting, and they've got different price levels, you know, $5, $10, $20, up to about $80 a month for essentially for varying levels of CPU, memory, storage space, and outbound bandwidth. And it looks pretty competitive. I haven't actually quite sat down and compared it to Amazon EC2 just yet, but it seems, you know, comparable or perhaps a little bit cheaper depending on what level you're talking about. And certainly way, way, way simpler for people who are not super familiar with like administering Linux servers. LightSail looks like a really nice and easy way to get started. And what they do is they have a couple of basic operating systems. With EC2, you get a lot of choices, but with LightSail, you can basically have Amazon's flavor of Linux, or you can have Ubuntu Linux. So it's nice and simple. You just pick the operating system. They have a number of prepackaged software things that can go on it. So for example, you can just click a button and it'll deploy a Linux server running WordPress, for example, or a web server or something. So you can do some cool stuff with that, and it looks pretty interesting for simple things. And I was thinking about that in the context of maybe, you know, hosting your MDM server or something, if people are still thinking about doing that the way I do that with our Jamf installation on EC2. LightSail might be a simpler, easier way to do it, but just important to be aware that many of these MDM servers are pretty memory hungry, so the very lowest levels wouldn't really be appropriate for that. But it looked like an interesting product and an interesting entry into a market that Amazon hadn't really played in before, which is a kind of almost like consumer grade web services rather than just building blocks for developers.
So I have a theory about Amazon, mm-hmm. and like, if I was running Apple, which I'm clearly not, and not qualified to, so take that with a grain of salt, Amazon would be who I would perceive your biggest threat to be. Because if AI begins to dominate our technology interactions, and specifically if voice does take off, like I am still bearish on voice being a primary input, unless it becomes like way better, where it's very like conversational, like I don't have to
Star Trek class, yeah.
Yeah, like it's just, it is like almost you have to just, you don't have to worry about the, what, you know, how you word things. You don't have to trigger it with a, you know, hey, you know what, or even say, you know, Alexa, or you know, something like that. Like when, if that happens, like Amazon, I think is going to be like so far ahead of everybody else that it just is like, just won't matter. It'll be like their version of the iPod. Like they'll just be so far ahead of everybody else that it, Apple won't be able to catch up. Yeah. And so it's like, if when I think about that, and I think about like Amazon's content ecosystem, so they've got like the really good Amazon Prime videos in a lot of countries. Mm-hmm. They have their now very inexpensive Amazon Prime Music. The Kindle ecosystem is very, obviously, it is what it is. It's dominant.
Yep.
And then they've obviously got this huge retail arm, like, you know, e-commerce arm.
Mm-hmm.
All it takes is like for their, like for them to make a phone that's really good. And it's like they're coming in the back door to take Apple's customers to them. Like, I think it's like they're not going to sell them a phone today, but I could see them selling like a really good phone in about a decade or 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
I mean, I think the even bigger threat for Apple is that people stop caring about a phone, you know. And if you look at some of the AirPods, for example, like imagine AirPods by Amazon, backed by the Alexa voice system and all that kind of stuff. Why I think Amazon needs is they need more hooks into your data, you know, because I mean, I recently bought an Amazon Echo and I sent it back because it just didn't really do anything because I wasn't, like, it didn't have access to my calendar. It didn't have access to my contacts. It didn't, you know, all of that stuff was in Apple's silo, if you like. And I think Amazon would need to find ways into that. I'm not saying that can't be done, but that to me is the interesting part. And I think Amazon have got all the technologies, but they're not really a trusted brand in that space yet for me. But I get your point about the content, absolutely. And it was interesting to note that Netflix have just enabled downloading of their content as well, because that's, I was flying back from London on Tuesday night, and just looking down the plane, the number of people on the plane who were watching Amazon Prime Video on the plane was really notable. The two guys sitting beside me actually happened to both be watching Amazon Video on iPad Pros, just like I was. So it's quite interesting to see how that's, some of these things are starting to open up a little bit now.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. It's, you know, I don't think the average company is going to beat Apple with a new phone. Yeah, you're right. It'll probably be something else. Just as like the iPod wasn't beaten by a new MP3 player, it was beaten by smartphones.
Yeah.
And just as, you know, it's, so yeah,
just as Apple didn't beat PCs with the Mac, you know, they had to go to the next thing. And you can see the companies who haven't won in mobile, and Google for that matter, who did do pretty well in mobile, but Microsoft in particular, and Amazon, and for that matter Snapchat and Facebook and so on, trying to go to the next thing, whether that be VR or AR or AI or, you know, whatever it is. And I think it's interesting to kind of watch that space. And I think it's going to be a tricky situation for schools, because I was just doing one of our kind of regular e-safety assemblies today, and I was like, I can just about explain, you know, how to stay safe on the internet, et cetera, et cetera, in a world where we've got smartphones. But when the world becomes something embedded in your ear and something you're wearing on your face, you know, enumerate all the ways in which somebody could take a picture of you in 10 years' time, that's going to be a pretty interesting assembly.
It's true. So what else do we have before we get into our topic today?
Well, the reason I was flying back from London was I had spent a couple of days at a Swift early adopters meeting at Apple in London. And what we did there was, there was a number of, maybe 40 teachers were invited to this event. And I spoke at the event. I talked about our experience with Swift Playgrounds and a few other teachers from other schools, one from Cambridge and one from Spain. This guy was showing pictures of his school in the Canary Islands off the coast of Africa, which was just beautiful and sunny and everything, and everybody was quite jealous of him. But he showed some stuff about what he had been doing with Swift, and we shared our experience teaching with Swift Playgrounds and so on. And then we sort of talked around with the people who were there. It was a really interesting time. There wasn't a whole lot, we didn't learn a whole lot new about the future of Swift Playgrounds, but we certainly, it was a good opportunity for teachers who either had or were about to start teaching with Swift to sort of feedback to the team at Apple what we had found and so on. And the feedback I gave was really, it was very positive. I think our experience with Swift Playgrounds so far, we've been teaching it since October, has been really, really very good. a number of feature requests and things for the app to do things slightly differently, but in general, it has actually worked out really, really well, and we're very happy with that. And also the content has proven really good as well. And one of the notable things I see is that compared to teaching, for example, Python, I spend a whole lot more time doing the teaching side, the conceptual side of computer programming, rather than sort of helping people interpret obscure Python errors or fix white space or something like that. So overall, I would say adopting Swift has been a big win in school.
Very cool. Well, good to catch up there. And what we're doing this week is talking about GTD again. So we've, for the past few weeks, been talking about the GTD methodology and how that would apply in a school context. So just as a recap, like there's a book called Getting Things Done, and then there's a methodology. We're talking about the methodology. And just, you know, in real simple terms, like it's very focused on projects and actionable items, and then also focusing on keeping you, or you know, helping you understand what you can do today and what you need to do today. Now, one thing we kind of failed to mention, and it's I guess by design with my system, is context. And so the idea behind context is, so like there are certain tasks that you can only do at home, or only do like with your computer, or only do like at work. And so you assign context, and then while you're like in your system, you only focus on things you can do based on that location. But yeah, but for me, like I don't use that much. You know, if there's something that I can only take care of like at home, I would generally only schedule that like task to be available during hours I'm at home, and then vice versa like at work. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, and in years past, people used to like have one that was like, this was an online context. Well, to me, I'm always on the on the internet, and so like that doesn't make any sense anymore.
Yeah, I think the context idea is a good one, but I think the way that it comes from a time before ubiquitous internet access, and also before most people's jobs transitioned so completely to like online knowledge work, if you like. And the fact that so much of everything we do is electronic. I mean, think about the teaching world, right? iTunes U, you can write your lessons from anywhere. You can do your marking from anywhere. You can, you can communicate with students from anywhere and so on. The world of there being sort of physical constraints on your work now, I mean, of course, some people do have that, but even in education, it's not so true anymore. Perhaps a little bit more true in education, because I can't, for example, I can't speak to a student, have an interview with them when I'm at home, right? I've got to be in school, and they've got to be in school before that can happen. But in general, we can do so much of our work from anywhere that the idea of constraints on our work is quite a wee bit old-fashioned now, I think. I only use two contexts in my GTD system, and they're called working and not working. And they're not so much constraints as sort of expressions of what I want to do right now. So, you know, sometimes, you know, as a teacher, you'll work in the evenings, and occasionally you'll have a personal thing to deal with at school. So it's not so much the where am I, or what am I doing, or what time is it really, but rather, am I working or am I not working? And I would say, obviously, the vast majority of my school time is spent working on school stuff, but then at home sometimes I need to be doing work for the next day, but other times like the weekend I don't want to do any work, I want to just do the things that I've got to take care of at home, so I'll just flip into the not working context, for example, and only bother myself with things that I'm doing for myself, kind of thing. So I live in that context, sort of Friday from 3 o'clock through to Sunday 3 o'clock, and then Sunday evening tends to be more of a kind of school time again, so getting ready for the next week and that kind of thing. So contexts are definitely changing. There's different people have written differently about how context might help. I don't know if you've seen some of these things. There's a guy called I'm blanking on his name right now. I think Sven Fechner, maybe. He wrote an article called A Fresh Take on Context, and his idea was that you would set context according to your kind of energy and wellness level. So you would say, I'm really on, or I'm focusing, or I'm really tired, or I'm kind of unwell, and you would categorize your tasks by how you felt or how you think you would need to feel in order to do that task. So that's definitely worked for some people. It's not, I've tried that. It hasn't really worked for me as such, but it could be useful for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, everybody's context and how their brain operates is different. My theory is always, or my advice has always been to make it work to how you want to work. So what we want to talk about today is like how students might apply getting things done. And I'll tell you, I needed this in school, particularly college. I really, really could have used this. Students, I'll say, like, have a lot of inputs and then a lot of outputs. And then they have, you know, like, you know, let's say depending on what kind of school you're in, how your schedule's set up, you may have anywhere from like 4 to 7 to 8 classes. And there's a lot of input and outputs and a lot of people telling you to do things, and you have deadlines, you have priorities. And obviously that's like somewhat what we have. Like we may have various projects in our jobs. So students being able to keep track of all these things is the ability for them to stay focused and organized, and like when they're studying, to be studying and not worrying about the things like they can't do right now or the projects that they can't work on.
Yeah. So some of those might include things like I need access to a particular lab at school, or I need some access to equipment, or I need access to team members if you're doing a team project or something like that. And if those people aren't here, you can't make progress on the kind of project. But even for students, Bradley, that's something that's going away. The idea that you have to be with people to work with them, you know, even, you know, when you have something like Google Docs in your school, for example, or Google Drive, the idea that you've got to be physically next to the person to work with them is starting to kind of go away as well.
That's true. So how I'd set it up if I was like in school today, or if I went back to school, is each subject, like each class I was taking, would get a single action list in OmniFocus. So that's like an OmniFocus term to where, you know, some projects are sequential tasks. Like, so task 2 is not available until task 1 is complete, and so on. But so I'd set just like a general single action list. This is just for like, miscellaneous stuff goes in here. General assignments would be in here basically. But like if I had a project for a class, like let's say there was a big report for my history class, like I would create, that would be its own projects.
Mm-hmm.
And so you definitely kind of keep that separate. And then obviously like I would constantly dump like due dates, notes, et cetera, into my inbox. And then really before, like, you know, let's say at the end of the day, before I started any homework, I would process the crap out of that inbox and get it all organized, and then focus on what I need to work, plan out my week, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really the same concepts. It's just how you structure your data.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that we've actually done a bit of work on this at school to try and kind of help students with this is we haven't introduced GTD as such, but we've applied a few of the ideas. And one of the things that we've talked about quite a lot is sort of having a trusted system and a routine. And that's something that kind of comes up in GTD a lot, is the idea of there's one place or two places only where you have to look for stuff. And one of the ways we've done that is, you know, we use iTunes U extensively throughout the school. So all the homework goes into iTunes U. But what we also do, and this is sort of a transitional thing at the moment, but it's as much for the sake of the parents as for the students, is they also write it in a paper homework diary as well. So those are like the canonical lists of sort of tasks and things like that. I don't know of too many students, although I do know of a couple who are doing like another level of organization on top of that. But it's something that it's sort of increasingly we're seeing students being aware of things like time management as well, and starting to try and find their own solutions to that as well.
Yeah, true. It's all about modifying it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that is difficult for students to get, right? And you think about, you know, high school and middle school students, GTD seems extremely complex and fiddly when you haven't experienced the kind of level of challenge that GTD is designed to solve. So your GTD comes from the world of, you know, high-end executive tasks. And when you're a student, you're basically an assignment machine, and you're given very little kind of optionality as to how you use your time. You know, it's not like you're given a vague goal and you're given a year and a half to get there. You're given very structured, you know, even to every hour in the day. You know, you're here, then you're here, then you're here, and here are deadlines, and here are homework assignments, and so on and so on. And those things, that's where GTD and school are a little bit disjoint from each other, because GTD is very much about organizing and planning out work that is unclear, whereas schoolwork is very often not unclear. It's just there's a lot of it, and the deadlines tend to be quite short, and sometimes you have to learn before you do, but in general the optionality is not too great that you have to have a system to overcome it. But what we often find is that, you know, in most school systems, students have, at some point, they have a sharp transition from a world in which they're easily able to cope with their workload to a world in which they sort of get overwhelmed. I don't know, do you have a good feeling of where exactly that is in your system, Bradley?
I don't.
Yeah, it differs from country to country. Sometimes it's only in university. You know, once you leave school and go to university, that's when you get piled on. But in our system in Scotland, I can tell you exactly when it is, which is when you go from the fourth year into the fifth year of secondary school, and you go from doing exams called nationals to exams called higher's. And the step between national and higher has always been, even in the face of multiple, you know, reconstructions of the curriculum, has always been a huge big step up. And what you often see is students just not able to cope with the additional workload in the next year. And it's sad to see it sometimes, because you see people who, you know, they're going along and first year they're fine, and second year they're fine, and third year they're fine, and then fourth year they get there, and then fifth year they're just absolutely nowhere. And it's not just for lack of time management. I mean, for some people it's just that they don't have the ability to do that level of complex work. But other times, you know, you see some kids, they're able to do it, but they just aren't able to organize themselves enough to get through that kind of workload. And that's actually kind of used as an indicator by some universities of your suitability for university, is how many subjects you sat in that fifth year and whether or not you passed them all, you know. So it's an interesting thing to think about, like, to what extent does self-management and self-organization actually contribute to success or failure at that level?
Well, and that's true. It's like one of those, you don't know you need a system like this until you're in a situation that, like, causes you to know you need it.
Yeah, at which point it's too late to learn the system, right? Because, you know, in our curriculum, we basically have from August to Christmas, and then it's all into other stuff. You know, there's prelim exams and other stuff. So getting through that all is pretty tricky and pretty challenging.
I mean, I would love to go back and be a student again. Like, with what I know now, I thought I could be way more organized.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting. I picked up GTD as a young graduate. You know, I had left university and was working my first job, and that was when I really picked up GTD. And I worked on it really hard for a number of years, but then it's only been, I think, in the last 2 or 3 years when I've got so much more responsibility now that it's really become, it's not just, oh, I do it sometimes and then other times I don't. But now I'm like, every week I've got to be on with my GTD system, otherwise things are not going to get done. And that to me is, I'm glad that I've worked on it for so many years that now when I really need it, it's there and it's ready for me as well. I mean, how do you get started with this, I think, is an interesting question. Like, how do you start to motivate young students? I mean, we're talking people maybe aged 10, 11, 12. I'm thinking of my own daughter here. You know, she... I'm watching her kind of go into early secondary school, and her workload's increasing, and the tests that are coming along are tougher, and she's got more of them, and she's having to manage her time. She's still got things like music tuition and after school sports and things like that as well. And she's starting to have to learn some of those kind of self-management techniques. And I've started to introduce some of them to her, but not... I haven't sort of sat there and gone, now, April, here is the workflow and you should follow these steps, you know, because I know she would kind of react against that. But I've tried to suggest things like the idea of a review, right? So talk about, whenever she gets kind of overwhelmed or something, we'll say, like, let's just sit down and just let's look at all the things you've got to do. Let's do a review of where the world is. And quite often that's enough. She already knows, I know she knows this, that there's a feeling of relief that comes when you do that kind of review. And she's only reviewing like 3 or 4 things, right? You know, my review is like 50 or 60 things, but still in all, she's still getting the same payoff as I'm getting at her scale by doing just a little step back and look at what's going on here. And similarly with other things like planning out a project. You know, I've got a test and it's in 2 weeks' time. And I even did this with my middle daughter, Beth, who's only 9. She had a presentation to do. It's actually due tomorrow. And we said, look, okay, Beth, this week we're going to work on building the presentation, and then next week we're going to practice a presentation, and then you're going to do it. And that's actually worked out really well, because, you know, she was ill for a day and then I was ill for a day. So we lost a lot of time in the middle, but because we had planned that out, she, you know, is ready to do a presentation tomorrow and it's going to be fine. So trying to introduce little bits. But then what I always do with that is I say, look, we've just done this thing. Tell me how much better you feel now that we've done that. And they quite often say, yeah, I feel much better now that I've looked at that. So I just say, well, remember that for next time. And not to drive in, but that's the idea. Yeah.
So it's interesting that you're introducing GTD by starting with like what we would consider to be the end of it, the review.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And because for me, that's the one that pays off, right? It's sort of satisfying to make a list and it's sort of satisfying to record things. But in many ways, I'm thinking about our school. We've got the recording part all sorted, right? People have got these trusted systems called iTunes U and the Homework Diary. But it's what they're really thinking about is the next step, which is how do I get through all of this and how do I get a high level of perspective and control on what this landscape looks like. Because when you're a kid and you think about what a kid's day is like, they're rushing about period all the way through the day. And then they get home and there's a club and the baby's crying and it's tea time and then you've got to get a bath. And then, where's the space in there where you're going to do the work? And I think just the kind of overscheduled way that children are these days, I think people are, the need for this is moving further and further down the years as well.
Okay, this is going to sound like a dumb question. What is tea time?
Tea time, you would call it dinner time, right?
Okay.
Is that a Scottish thing? I don't know. We call it tea sometimes. Tea time.
Well, I would say, like, to me, it would be like we're going to drink tea together. And like I would say, let's go have coffee.
Or you're getting on the golf course. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's interesting, like, it's like when you, because in reality, the review for like in that situation you described is really not a review as much as it is pouring out what's in your head into an inbox and just seeing where it's laid out.
Yeah, yeah. I would be really interested at some point to try and like put actual OmniFocus in the hands of a couple of students and see how they get on with it. I think some people would love it and some people would just be like, don't care. But I think if you can do something like I've just described to sort of demonstrate the value of the task, then why you do it sort of makes sense. And I think the other thing that I've encouraged people to do, and this is something that I have kind of brought back into my GTD practice, is reviewing things early, like as soon as you get them. This is something I used to do at university all the time, which was whenever we got an assignment, even because sometimes the assignments were for weeks away, I would always read the assignment in close detail the first day I got it. And then I would maybe, schedule it for a week away. I wasn't going to start it straight away. But what I often found was that at some point during that time, the solution would just kind of come to me, whether that was in the shower or sometimes fully formed, sometimes partly formed. But the fact that I had sort of worked on it like almost subconsciously for a while had really often helped to get the solution in place. So demonstrating the benefit of that to students is really hard, but sometimes you just occasionally see somebody does it and they get the win from it, and it was easy for them, which is great.
And so really, like, you wonder, are there any schools that are teach these kind of techniques to their students? Like, not even just GTD, but like, are they teaching like productivity skills to students, or they just expect them to figure it out?
Yeah, I don't know. I think my sense is that there's an increasing awareness of the need for techniques of self-management in students. Whether or not many schools are teaching formal GTD, I would love to know. And if anybody knows of any schools, please write in or tweet us and let us know. But one of the things that you sort of need for GTD, I think, is a lot of self-reflection. And that's something that teenagers are typically not very good at. And that's why I try and encourage it as much as I can, but I also am aware that it's something that teenagers are not always interested in doing very much of, is sort of reflecting on themselves. So it's, for me, what I like to see is I like to see techniques to avoid feeling overwhelmed, the awareness in students that there are constraints on your action, right? And students often have many more constraints than we do, because they have schedules and so on and different things. Also, they don't necessarily have all the technology that adults have as well. So, schools that are one-to-one like ours, maybe a little bit more so, but even so, increasingly starting to see the weekly review as being a critical skill for students. It doesn't have to be long, and if you're only 14 or 15, then you're not dealing with that many things, but just kind of planning out some time and getting a sense of perspective, because if you're of a certain mindset, it's really easy to get overwhelmed by everything that's happening. So it's really important too. But just also being aware that the schedule is tight. It really is.
Well, and you know, you said something a little while ago that I thought was true. Students are rushed around all day, all day, all day, you know, class to class to class. And then it's like, and then, you know, we get home, they have activities, and it's like dinner time, it's bath. It's like, why isn't your homework done? It's like, when would I have done it?
Yeah.
You know, that's, yep. And of course, yep. I have like feelings about homework and you know, how much there should be and what is the role in that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, something that, you know, you've got here in the notes is realizing that work needs to be broken down into steps is, I think, such an important life skill for everybody to understand. I mean, because that can help you in all types of jobs. I was having a GTD conversation with somebody yesterday, and I said, it's about taking things like, you'll plan a company retreat. And that's not a task item. Like, that's a project. Like, you know, it's like, okay, you're stressed out about planning this company retreat, but you've not even broken down what's involved in planning it. So, like, the first thing you got to do is figure out what you have to do.
Yeah. And fortunately for students, quite often teachers are good at telling people the breakdown of work. But other times, that's the kind of skill that's being taught and tested, is whether or not you can do that. And I think sometimes teachers are not very clear on what it is they're trying to get. And I always, when I'm teaching, I try to be really explicit with the kids about, like, what is the actual skill you are either required to be able to do an exercise here or learn and then do. And for example, we do a project called Making Multimedia. And what we do in there is students have to build, they have to choose a topic and they have to work through a breakdown of that topic to put it into different categories and, you know, pull out important parts and then sub important parts and so on. And then they have to build something based on that design. And I'm always really clear to them that part of the whole purpose of this module, this exercise that we do, is because I want to see, first of all, can you pick out the best things? We've already done some exercises on that before, but can you then sort of make a plan and follow a plan and execute on a plan? And then finally, can you reflect back on your original plan, having made it, and see that that thing matches? Okay. To the students, it looks like we're making a keynote, but in fact, I really call out to the students and say, look, this is what we're actually doing, right? Can you see the bigger picture here? And really calling it out to them. And that's something that I think helps some students. Other students are not quite maybe ready to get it at that point yet, but it's instructive to stretch them that far to see who is and who isn't and who needs a little bit of support and who thinks about these things in a different way. So it's that kind of thing that I try and do. Not every student gets that kind of experience in classroom, but I think I've found it a very powerful way to teach what we might call higher order skills, because, you know, everybody can make a keynote, but can you manage a project? And that's kind of, I try and build some of that into my classes as well.
Well, because that's going to help them in all future classes. I mean, it's like, and it's just going to help them to stay on task, which we're always wanting students to stay on task. It's like, you clearly know what your next action is in this project, mm-hmm. or this assignment. Like, just do it. Like, just, you know, you've defined what you need to do. Now just kind of do the work. But I think I agree with what you said about students have different, they have different constraints. Could be like, you know, financial resources. You know, it's like if you and I, you know, if, I don't know, like if there's something like that can, I can buy, you know, a $30 application that's going to like save me a bunch of time on a project. Like I can just do that and not think twice about it. But a student might not have that same luxury. Again, maybe they can't even drive. Like, you know, it's just different. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't have internet at home. Like that, again, those are things to consider. But, you know, everything we've talked about with GTD isn't like you've got to use like a certain app. It is basically breaking down your life down into what's important to you, defining what needs to be done, how you can do it, and, you know, and kind of looking at what are successful outcomes here of this project.
Yep, and these are all skills that are important to develop. I think they're important to develop in the early years of secondary school, because once you get up to the higher years of secondary school, then you've got to have those skills already, at least at some level. And in some way, that's what secondary school is about, is either teaching you them or making later on testing to see whether or not you've got those skills before you move on to university or whatever as well.
Well, you know, there's a part of me that like thinks I did a little bit of this in college, because I would really schedule out my day. I would even like plan in like playing Xbox. I don't even know. Yeah. It's like stupid. Like it's like, you know, Ghost Recon time on Xbox Live.
Well, we often do this kind of thing with students when it comes to sort of exam time. You know, it's like 4 or 5 weeks before the exam, right? Let's make a study plan. But what would it be if students had the skill to do that themselves every week? You know, it's a challenge because students are not in control of their time. Even at home, you know, parents have got plans, parents have got constraints as well. And parents sometimes plan holidays during the school term and things like that as well. And that can all impact a student's ability to complete the tasks that they're needed to complete as well.
So to kind of wrap this up in conclusion with the students, what I would start with is, you know, kind of have the students define what's expected of them right now. Like, what is due? Like, when are these projects, you know, what do they have coming up in the next 2-3 weeks? Let's get that all on the table. Let's break those projects down, and then let's get to work. And then at the end, you can review it and see where you're at. But it is kind of that first step is the initial brain dump. And that's helpful for all of us when it comes to projects. Like, you know, if you're feeling overwhelmed by something, you probably like have things in your head you need to get down on paper and get processed.
Yep, that's the game. And students need a lot of support for that as well. And, you know, teachers try and support students, but also a lot of support's needed at home as well. And I sometimes think that those years in secondary school are critical because quite often parents think that they come through, you know, elementary school and middle school, then they can just switch off. But in fact, I think kids actually need their parents to support them as much when they're 12, 13, 14 as they do when they're, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And that, to me, that's critical as well.
So if you have any feedback for this series, we've gotten a lot of great stuff on Twitter and via email. Send it in at outofschool.net. We'd love to hear what you think. Or if any of you are doing this with your students, we'd love to chat with you. Thanks, everybody, for listening this week. We've got one more episode in 2016, and then we'll be off for a few weeks for a Christmas break. But you can find our show on the web at outofschool.net. We're in iTunes as well. We appreciate you sharing the show with your friends as they may be traveling for Christmas. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, you can do that at Bradley Chambers, and my blog is at chambersdaily.com.
Okay, and I am Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Have a good week, everybody.